I'll give you a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxing, waxing. Now won't you give me down?
Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of The Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
What's your definition of good hair?
Some of that looks relaxed and nice.
If your hair is relaxed, white people are relaxed. If your hair is nappy, they're not happy.
Oh, God. This October, Chris Rock will take you back to your roots.
Just yesterday, my daughter came into the house and said, "Daddy, how come I don't have good hair?" I wonder how she came up with that idea.
Within the black community, if you have good hair, you're prettier or better than. The lighter, the brighter, the better.
They want to go like this, like Farrah Fawcett.
There's so many pressures to straighten your hair.
Look at my ring, still there. Relax is the chemical that will take a black woman's hair from this and change it into this.
It's kind of like a torture session.
Could you tell us how dangerous Relaxer is?
Sodium hydroxide will burn through your skin.
So that can's got a good perm.
And this whole side was burnt off, and that's how the asymmetrical look came in with salt and pepper.
So you saying your hair is addicted to Relaxer?
I am on the creamy crack.
Creamy crack.
So what's in your hair now?
This is a weave.
This is a weave. Two pieces here.
You know, like extensions.
Like that.
The black hair business is a $9 billion business.
One of these can run you $5,000.
Well, I have a layaway plan.
So you can lay away the weeds.
That's right.
Have you ever put your hand through a black woman's hair?
Hell no, not a black woman.
You just don't touch it.
Do not touch my weave.
No.
Does your wife let you touch her hair?
The question is, do I let her touch mine?
Weave sex is a little awkward.
What do you do?
I guess stay on top.
This is a 7,000-pound batch of Relax.
This will last Prince about a month.
Get ready to go around the world.
Right now, I have Indian hair.
Human hair is India's biggest export.
Minimum 10 inch to 40.
10 inches and better.
Yes.
It's like porno.
Tell me.
In the award-winning new comedy that Vanity Fair calls hilarious.
Has anybody ever tried to steal your hair?
No.
If you see some black women, just run the other way. What I really wanted to know, if I could make any money selling black hair. Black hair! Would you like to buy some black hair?
They don't want to look like, you know, alpha cut like this. You make sure the hair's straight, look more natural.
So my nappy hair is not worth anything.
Good hair.
My advice for men when they're making love to a woman who has weave is keep your hands on the top.
Welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm your host, Rob St. Mary, and joining me is co-host extraordinaire, Mr. Mike White.
And just a reminder, I am as bald as a cue ball.
That is true. And joining us, special guest co-host, Detroit radio personality and media professional, and also a good friend of mine, Miss Erica Murphy.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about the 2009 documentary Good Hair. The film stars comedian Chris Rock as a guide through the wild and woolly world of black women's hair. From relaxers to weaves to braids and everything in between, we go from Atlanta to L.A. and even to India on a quest to find out all about what African-American women are willing to do and how much they're willing to spend in order to have the perfect do. And, of course, that just scratches the surface. And I thought, as two white guys, one who's bald and one whose hair is falling out, Good Hair is the perfect film for us to talk about, for obvious reasons. So, Erica, as our guest, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on Good Hair?
Well, if we're talking about the phrase Good Hair, I have some thoughts on that. But if we're talking about the movie, I thought that Chris Rock did a phenomenal job in, you know, highlighting what black women are willing to do to get to the state of having, quote unquote, good hair.
What is your definition of good hair?
I really have a problem with assigning good and bad to hair. I think it's just hair. And that is something that's really prevalent in the African-American community. I think that in recent years, we're kind of getting away from that. People are becoming more comfortable with wearing their natural texture. And, you know, it's pretty popular to wear your hair naturally. But I just really have a problem with that good hair label. That's horrible because it means that if your hair isn't straight, then the opposite is bad hair, right? Yeah. I have a teenage daughter. She just went off to college, but we had a lot of issues with her feelings about her hair. And I noticed that very early on, you know, when she was a tiny little girl. And so I was very careful not to use the word nappy. I would say that her hair was tightly curled because I think nappy has such a negative connotation. So I just wanted her to know that she had just little tiny little ringlets and they were very cute, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. What's funny is when I was a kid, I had really curly hair and my folks didn't cut my hair for the first several years. And the way I was dressed as a little boy up until about age 3 or 4, people would say, "Oh, you have such a lovely little girl," to my folks. So I can understand sort of, you know, what hair means to people and how it can lead to certain images and things like that. So it's interesting that you bring up the conversation dealing with your daughter, because the structure of good hair deals, at least in the opening, with Chris Rock talking about trying to frame this from the perspective of being a dad.
"Those are my daughters, Lola and Zara, the most beautiful girls in the world. And even though I tell them that they're beautiful every single day, sometimes it's just not good enough. Just yesterday, Lola came into the house crying and said, 'Daddy, how come I don't have good hair?' I wonder how she came up with that idea."
The way that the film's kind of put together kind of in a way reminds me of what Michael Moore kind of does in his films, where there's kind of like little skits or he goes around and he talks a little to people and there's sort of these scenes that kind of highlight a particular idea. So, Mike, what did you also think of the film?
Yeah, I like the way that he used his daughters as kind of this frame on either end, but then also following the hair competition as well as we go through things, and kind of using both of those as kind of this almost like a spine on which to hang other things as we go through and kind of follow this whole journey of what women's perceptions of their own hair and of themselves are, and then kind of tracing that through the whole line of relaxers and weaves and all this, and just kind of really pushing through with the story. I love the way that it was paced. I thought it was very well put together and super informative, because obviously as a white guy and growing up downriver, I think I was talking to you about this just a couple of weeks ago. It's like at the time when I was growing up in Riverview, like each class had like one black person per class. So like one sophomore, one freshman, one senior, one junior. And that was it. That was the max of my exposure to black people other than movies and television. I didn't really like hang in those circles. So I had no idea that there even was a difference between white people's and black people's hair for a long, long time. And I still had questions about it. And this helped kind of dispel some of those questions and inform me as to all of the things that people go through when it comes to their own hair. I mean, you know, growing up as kind of a punk rocker, hair was such a very significant part of that kind of culture. The only real exposure I ever had to what black people go through when it comes to their hair was reading the autobiography of Malcolm X when I was like a sophomore or junior, and just going, "Oh my God, there's like a whole other world out there. This is crazy."
And it was sort of the same for me. I mean, the film is great because it brought me into an understanding that I didn't really have. I mean, I understood that there were certain things that people did, like certain kind of process and things like that. And it's funny you bring up the autobiography, because I read the autobiography after I saw the film, after I saw the Spike Lee film. And I remember that in the Spike Lee film, Malcolm X, there's that scene where he's getting, you know, the treatment to get his hair to look like that.
"Hey, fix to get that first complaint on, eh, homeboy?
You hot like hell?
Don't be scared, son. You ain't got nothing to worry about. You in the hands of an expert. My hair was just like yours. Look what he did for me."
"Jekyll, don't scare the man no more than you're scared already. Get his forehead and eyebrows shortened."
"Who's doing that?
Y'all heard that.
Y'all heard that.
Put my coat tail, the stars to stand, because this shit could burn a hole through some neck.
Hold tight, baby, and keep your eyes shut.
I thought
shut.
You said this was gonna sting, shorty."
"Yeah."
This ain't nothing.
Feel good, don't it?
Yeah, real good, don't it?
Yeah, it's all right.
You're gonna feel better than that in a minute.
It is. You never look good there, Shorty. Shorty's starting to heat up there a little bit.
It's all right.
Feeling better and better, isn't it?
Just hold on.
I'm holding, but it's heating.
You gotta make it straight.
Well, all right.
That's what he told me, too.
Shorty, I got to get this out, man. It's kind of starting.
Uh-oh.
I'm holding on.
Charlie, give me a hand. Help me out, Charlie. Hold him. Hold him.
Shorty.
Let's go to the sink. I got to get up. Cool it.
Put some water on it. More water.
It's okay. Wait, will you get it in my eye now? How's it feel?
I feel like I ain't got no skin on my head.
If you can talk, it's out.
Can't tell you.
It's straight though, right? I ain't doing this again.
Yeah, let me drop it.
I can tell, it's laying down.
Don't take it off yet.
All right.
That's the thing to do. Come on in here and get through. A moneymaker, a heartbreaker every step of the way. You're gonna flip. That's right. Watch your lip there. Cause you're gonna sip.
All right. Looks white, don't it?
And then also, like you said, when you read the autobiography of Malcolm X, sort of what this image is, sort of like why were they doing that then, and what was the image that was supposed to be? This is the popular image of how you're supposed to do your hair.
I think that was a great parallel that you drew between what was happening in the documentary and, you know, what happened in the film about Malcolm X, and of course in his autobiography, the book. That is, it doesn't burn, unless you leave it on too long. But yeah, that's pretty much what's happening with folks.
Yeah, I want to say with the book, it's been forever since I've read it. I remember it was called like Conking or something back then, right? And it was all like homemade stuff.
Shorty soon decided that my hair was finally long enough to be conked. He promised to school me in how to beat the barbershop's $3 and $4 price by making up congaline and then conking ourselves. I took the little list of ingredients he had printed out for me and went to a grocery store, where I got a can of Red Devil Lye, 2 eggs, and 2 medium-sized white potatoes. Then, at a drugstore near the pool room, I asked for a large jar of Vaseline, a large bar of soap, a large toothed comb, and a fine toothed comb, one of those rubber hoses with a metal spray head, a rubber apron, and a pair of gloves. "Going to lay on that first conk?" the drugstore man asked me. I proudly told him, grinning, "Right."
But it reminded me later on of like watching Fight Club, and when he gets the chemical burn on his hand and how much it burns just in that one little scene. And to think of putting all those chemicals on your hair, and it kind of reminded me like that whole idea of like prison tattoos, where it's just this kind of homemade thing that you're doing with household products, and you know, you're doing it to yourself, or he had other people helping him out. But yeah, just that, like the lengths that you're going through for beauty and fashion, and just the pain that he experienced with that whole thing.
Well, I think that there's something else underlying there. I mean, yes, I think that it has something to do with beauty and fashion, but I think more so it's more so about the African American underlying need to assimilate, you know, into American culture, and thinking that if they do things to make themselves look more European, then they'll be more accepted. I hope that makes sense.
No, I think that makes total sense. And I think that's such a valuable part of that autobiography of Malcolm X experience. And I know we're talking about this on top of Good Hair, but just kind of drawing this parallel, but just the way that he starts with that, and then the way that he mentally and physically progresses through his life and through the story of him, just, you know, because at the end, I don't think he would have given a shit about what his hair was like, you know, probably wanted it to be tight, to be, you know, well-groomed, but I don't think he's about to buy into that whole idea of assimilation.
Yeah, exactly.
Who taught you, please? Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you.
The other thing that's interesting, too, from Good Hair is that he moves us through these various circles. And the one thing that I hadn't thought about is that sort of the hair culture, in a way, allows for the opportunity for entrepreneurialism. And I was going to ask, you know, what have you seen on that end? I mean, people owning shops and things like that?
Well, there's a lot of money being made. I think that Chris Rock really kind of showed, you know, how, like, it's a billion-dollar business, you know, this the hair weaves and the hair products, you know, to straighten the hair. But I've seen, I actually have a really good friend who, her aunt and her get hair directly from India, and she goes shop to shop. This is just kind of like a side hustle for her. And she sells this virgin hair. And I mean, she's making like $200 and $300 a bundle of hair.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a big business.
Yeah. I like that one of the guys that he interviewed in the film was a black market hair dealer over in India, and just talking about like the stealing of women's hair and everything, and just what that kind of business is like.
Are there like hair farms? Are there like just places where just a bunch of women are sitting there growing hair?
No. It's everything from sacrifice, don't you?
Everything's from the sacrifice. Your other friends sacrifice their hair too?
Yeah, everybody does.
Everybody does it. I guess nobody in India buys hair.
Yeah, we already have our own hair.
It's like fish buying water. Has anybody ever tried to steal your hair?
No, not yet.
If you see some black women, just run the other way.
Okay.
That just hurt me that to see that these people are going to this temple, you know, and they're showing their devotion by shaving off all their hair, and then this hair is being taken and sold. You know what I mean? That's rough.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing, because that's the thing. I don't necessarily think people think of where it comes from. I mean, the only thing I can think of close to it is there's a group that if you grow your hair long, they'll cut it and then they'll use it to make wigs for kids who have cancer. I remember that from when I was, you know. But I had never known that, you know, it's like, oh, there's this place in India where people shave off all their hair and then it ends up back here.
Yeah.
It's called the Tonsure Festival, and obviously tonsure is when you shave and cut your hair and everything, but it's so weird. I mean, India is such a fascinating place for me just because of the way that British culture and Indian culture collide, and you would think that it might have more of an Indian name to the festival, but that they just kind of put on the billboards and everything, you know, tonsure. It's just like, it is such a weird thing for me, just kind of as an aside.
85% of India's population have had their hair shaved at least twice in a lifetime in a religious ceremony known as tonsure. In India, hair is considered a vanity, and removing hair is considered an act of self-sacrifice.
In the film, he has all these like interviews with various people. I mean, obviously, various celebrities of various types. Ice-T talks about how he used to do it himself. Talked about how there was a certain sort of like street cred you had if your rollers were a certain size or color.
I relaxed my hair when I was in the 10th grade. And I tell you, when you was really gangster, you could show up in homeroom with rollers in your hair. And you had rank by how big the rollers were. Like the yellow rollers were smaller and they get bigger and bigger. The orange rollers meant you had more hair. So it was like, you know, I actually got a mugshot some damn where with rollers in my hair.
The one quote that I thought was interesting, this sort of kind of goes on the business end where, like you were talking about your friend being able to go out and hustle and make a little extra money, or, you know, you can have mom and pop beauty shops and that kind of helps as well, is Al Sharpton talking about how it's so expensive that you basically end up wearing this, you know, as he called it, sort of like wearing your oppression on your head every day.
No wonder the schools and everything else is out of control. I mean, you get up and comb your oppression and exploitation every morning, or you attach your economic exploitation to the back of your head every morning, or you shove it down, or you put it on the nightstand. Here's my symbol of economic exploitation. Lights out, go to sleep, wake up, and cover it back up. How are you going to think right when you're wearing exploitation all the time? That is a real grassroots need, to recapture the fact that we can't control something as close to us as the hair on our head.
He's one to talk. I mean, have you noticed Al Sharpton's hair? I mean, he straightens it.
Yeah, and he talks about that in the film, you know.
Yeah.
So it's
that is kind of poignant, wearing your oppression on your head.
Yeah, that whole story of him and James Brown going to the White House, that was awesome.
That was. Let me just say, though, that I think that it's okay for people to have choices. You know, if it, whatever makes you feel good, I'm all for it. If you're into weaves, if you're into relaxers, you know, whatever. If you want to shave your head off, have at it. I think that people should have choices.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most definitely. It was like, but in that scene where he talks about going to the White House with James Brown, it almost seemed like James Brown wanted to build clones. It was really disturbing. He's like,
the James Brown army.
Yeah. It's like, you're going to go to the White House, you're going to look like me.
Oh, wow.
And I'll never forget, he says, when you go to the White House, I want you to look like me. Because when people see you, I want them to see me. You're a reflection of me. He took me to a lady in Augusta named Mary. Said, I want you to style Rev's hair like mine.
That scene with the scientist where they're talking about what hair relaxer does to a tin can, to me, was one of the most poignant moments of the film as well. Just showing just a few minutes in the relaxer, and then, you know, what was it like? Only like an hour in the can, it dissolved completely.
Yeah, that's really something. If I can just kind of like interject my own personal experience with the relaxer, I used to relax my hair, you know, all the time. I think I got my first one when I was maybe about 10. I begged my mother for it, and like a couple weeks later, my hair fell out completely. Bald-headed 10-year-old. So anyway, I continued to get perms, if you will, and, you know, my hair just wouldn't grow. And so, like, in 2000, I met a hairstylist who said he just wanted to press my hair, right? And I'm like, oh, I need a perm. Trust me, I need to straighten my hair. And so I let him do my hair. I grew my perm out, and my hair has just been so healthy and long ever since. So that relaxer was really damaging my hair. I don't think it has the same effect on everyone's hair, but for me, that wasn't a good look.
The other side of this, the other spine of the film is the Bronner Brothers show down in Atlanta, and all of this, and sort of this competition, this big competition. Have you ever gone to one of those? What's sort of your take on it?
I've never been to the Bronner Brothers show, but I have been to hair shows. You know, Detroit has a lot of hair shows, and I have been to them. They're just, to me, they're not. There's nothing like realistic about a hair show. It's just like everything is an exaggeration. It's really fun, you know, but it's not like you could look at it and say, hey, I'm going to wear that style, you know, next week or something. I've seen helicopter hair. Yes, they make weaves into like a helicopter, you know, what do you call it? The propeller. I've seen some really wild stuff, but I don't, like I said, I don't think it's practical, but it's fun.
Yeah, it really reminds me of kind of like fashion shows where you have that haute couture kind of thing. And then, of course, you're never going to buy the craziness that you see on the runway, but maybe you'll buy, or in this case, style something that is kind of like a minor reflection of it, you know, just like one note of the chord that they're giving you, or more like the symphony that they're giving you on the runway or on the stage. But yeah, it's so fascinating to me. I can't remember if we say this in the interview that we do later on, but I was a huge fan of Hair Battle Spectacular on Oxygen. So I was all about watching these kind of insane do's and weaves and different styles just kind of coming to life through this quote-unquote reality TV show.
I've never seen that show. Hair Battle Spectacular, huh?
Yeah, it was, Rob's going to laugh because I was just going on and on about Tyra Banks a couple weeks ago with America's Next Top Model. And one of the models, Eva Marcel, was the host of that. And then Derek J, who's in Good Hair, was one of the designers on that, and the judge, I should say.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I mean, to me, sort of the big hair show that you see there, and even stuff that we're going to talk about Hair Wars Detroit in a bit, is, to me, it's sort of a mashup between like a beauty shop and professional wrestling. It almost sort of seems like if those two things came together, you would end up with this kind of stuff. It's just kind of amazing what, you know, sort of the spectacle that folks put on.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's take a break and hear an interview we did recently with David Hump the Grinder Humphreys of Hair Wars Detroit, and also two ladies who are part of the natural hair movement, sisters Espy and Jennifer Thomas of Naturally Fly Detroit.
All right, I'm here with Bill Byforce and Mr. Chris to tell you a little bit about Outside the Cinema.
All right, Reverend Scott, take us to church.
What can we expect to find from a typical show?
2 hours of just random blabber.
Is there anyone's coattails you rode in on to popularity?
I'm the guy that fucking burns the coattails and then pisses on them.
You review all these exploitation, horror, comedy, cult, and often all-around terrible movies. You must have a strong driving force that keeps you going.
Ego.
I don't know if I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while.
Really?
I have been saying that for a while. Also, I'm high on smack.
Well, it's definitely working for you guys. People are coming out in droves to support you on iTunes.
We just the other day got a one-star review on iTunes.
Well, that is one star too many. Let me tell you, the worst fucking piece of shit I've ever heard.
This has been great, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Oh, that was good. Oh, he's got you crying over there.
I'm good for the rest of the year.
Nice.
That was too much.
Excuse me, what are you doing? Are you looking for porn again?
No.
Well, what is that I see?
It's not porn. It's the badassboobsandbodycounts.com website. I happen to be looking at the reviews in the boobs section of the site.
They have a section of the site dedicated to boobs?
Yes, they do. They cover exploitation films in the boobs category, action films in the badass category, and horror in the body counts category.
What's that other option, BBNBC podcast?
If you're not into reading the reviews, you can listen to them via the web on your mobile device through iTunes, and they cover the same types of films, lesser known action, exploitation, and horror cinema. So yeah, to answer your question, I wasn't cruising porn.
That's too bad.
What's too bad?
That you weren't cruising for porn.
Why?
Because I was feeling kind of horny.
Oh, wait, get back here. Hey, get back here.
Life is so busy. From my job to my family and all the things in between, sometimes you need to make a little time for yourself. And I found something nice to make those times oh so sweet. It's Vibrators.com. Vibrators.com has the perfect products for women, men, and couples. And if you're new to all this, they have plenty of helpful suggestions and information to make sure you get something just right for you. Plus, for over a decade, Vibrators.com has taken your privacy seriously. Go to the site and read all about it. And right now, when you use the special code BOOTH, that's B-O-O-T-H, at checkout, you'll receive free priority shipping on any order from Vibrators.com's huge catalog. That's Vibrators.com. Do something nice for you.
GGTMC live for you, fresh yeah. Big Willie and the Samurai are at your service, breaking films down and turning them around, giving recommendations that are always on point. Visit ggtmc.com for more information. The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to the trash since 1977.
Okay, my name is David Humphreys, better known as Hump the Grinder, and the producer and founder of Hair Wars. Did a lot of stuff with music before the Hair Wars. It's all kind of intertwined all together, you know. Started in the clubs, DJing, and brought Hair Wars into the club and took it out of there.
So as for that, I mean, sort of where did the idea of Hair Wars sort of originally start? As you said, it started in the clubs?
Yeah, started in the nightclubs. I used to do a lot of gimmicks in my parties, and one of the gimmicks just happened to be hair. You know, because I knew a lot of hairstylists that used to come out to my parties, you know, And it was time for them to, you know, get on the stage, we'll stop the party, and let's do a little hair, you know. So it got more popular than I ever thought it would, you know, because more hairstylists wanted that stage. So what started as like a little four-week promotion ended up being forever. We got 28 years now.
Oh, wow. How has the event changed over the years? What did it start out like, and then what is it now if somebody was to go to it?
It started real small, you know, like maybe a 15, 20 minute, half an hour hair show inside of a party. And no rules and regulations, basically. It was very informal. Now it's more of a, you know, we have rules and regulations, a format, a structure, much bigger. You know, we took it out of the small clubs and put them in different venues, like hotel ballrooms or, you know, banquet halls, places that, you know, hold 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people like that. And it's become more extravagant as far as, you know, this type of styles and the skits and performances that they put on. These are hair entertainers now. They're not just hairstylists.
This may sound like an odd comment, but I can't really think of anything that's sort of the equivalent that I know growing up as a white guy in the suburbs with, you know, folks doing this. That, you know, what is sort of the history of this kind of thing in sort of African-American culture?
Well, it's always been some type of performances, I guess. It's mostly through fashion shows, I would think, you know, as far as if you go back to when we first started doing, some of the hairstyles were involved with fashion shows, putting hair together for the fashion shows. I think that's where, and also not just the fashion shows, even the Motown. I met some guys, matter of fact, there was a guy named Big Dickie from Oak Park, Michigan, who he passed away, but he used to tell me stories about when he used to do hair for some of the Motown shows. And, you know, they used to put on shows that would include a lot of hair, but it just wasn't focused on the hairstylists, per se, like what we do now. These hairstyles are actually the stars, but back then they were doing the hair for the Supremes and, you know, the Marvelettes and all the groups, but they wasn't getting the recognition. They wasn't showcased as celebrities, which they are. Well, that's what we did, you know. Myself, trying to put them out there as hair entertainers, hair stars, and that never, that I know of, existed before, but the hairstylists have always put some stuff down in Detroit.
Now, you actually had, there was a documentary made about the Hair Wars event, wasn't it? The My Nappy Roots?
Well, it really wasn't about so much the Hair Wars. We had a segment in it. It was more of a history documentary. And when you talk about Chris Rock's Good Hair, that has something that, you know, he watched the film with them. Regina Kimball was the filmmaker, and they came to Detroit and rode around for a few days and got the flavor of what we do here. You know, the cut before that movie actually came out, it was a lot of Detroit in it, and she got nervous because people put pressure on her to take all that damn Detroit stuff out of there, you know. So a lot of the stuff, like the skyline and all the more of the interviews, it was really more about Detroit until the final cut came, and we got cut out that movie for the most part. So we just got a small segment in that film.
Yeah, if memory serves, a lot of it was centered in Atlanta, right?
Good Hair or My Nappy Roots?
The Good Hair, the final cut of that.
Basically all in Atlanta. You know, they used the Brown Brothers Convention, which is the biggest convention for blacks, you know, anywhere in the world. But it's not the hair capital. You know, Detroit has been a hair capital for a long time. Everybody knows that. But Brown Brothers, they have the biggest convention. So a lot of people, you know, and Detroit people come down there too. As a matter of fact, Detroit over the years has been representing their Brown Brothers more than any other city, you know, as far as platform artists doing hair on stage, renting their own booths. You know, we've been very aggressive in doing that. I used to go down there and rent booths myself from Brown Brothers, so it was the place to be. But he said all, and in the movie Good Hair, he said all the hair decisions are made here, and that's not true. We know that.
You know, Detroit's always been a big culture capital. I mean, you did mention Motown and things like that. What is it from what you've seen in the history, what is it that makes Detroit, like you say, you know, such a big thing in sort of hair culture like this?
Detroit, we don't copy off of nobody, man. We set our own stuff. We make our own things happen. We don't look at what other people are doing. Don't give a damn, really. You know, we just do what we feel like we want to do. And if you really want to go back, you got to look at the history of the black, you know, the blacks coming to the North. Back when Henry Ford gave people the opportunity to make money in the plants. You know, Detroit has always attracted a really aggressive people. You know, there was no blacks in America making money like they were in Detroit back in the day. You know, probably the 50s and around there when they started working them plant jobs. So we always had an aggressive feel. you know, that's probably one reason why, you know, Motown did this thing, because, you know, the blacks just were doing their thing up in Detroit. A lot of them, if you talk to blacks here today, you know, a lot of relatives are from the South, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, a lot of Southern Arkansas. You got a lot of Southern roots up here. But I think it really came from all the ones who were aggressive, wanted to make that money, wanted to get involved, wanted to do some things, ended up in this city before, say, other cities got whatever was left. I don't know if that's a good way of putting it, but that's where I see it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Hair Wars tour that you do?
Okay, well, we're not really touring actively like we were, kind of ran out of sponsor money, but we're ready to go back out there. But for 14 years, though, you know, we did like 10 cities a year. We were the only production company that was actually touring, you know, actually took the show out of Detroit. We always had Detroit hairstylists, you know, as part of every city that we've done. And we were going, our first city was in 1994, we went out to Los Angeles. That was our first stop. You know, L.A., everybody wanted to go to Hollywood. So we went out there and just took a lot of, all the Detroit top stars went out to that first show. And then we started going around, you know, to Miami. We did the Apollo in New York. New York wasn't one of our stops all the time, but we went out there and we've done places like Columbus, Ohio, small markets, Grand Rapids, Flint. Then we went out west and, you know, did some more cities out in California. We did San Diego every year. We did Las Vegas for about 7 years. And we did Oakland, San Jose. We just kind of worked it. We did some other stuff in Texas, like in Dallas. But we also did an educational tour. That was really more classes than shows. That nobody really talks about the class, the educational part. We would take stylists from Detroit to teach these people in all these cities. We did like 25 cities in 2 years. Back in 94, 95, we were out there all the time, just, you know, all over the country. And everybody, everywhere we went, well, most cities we went to, it was a few that didn't do so hot. But most of the places were like packed houses. Everybody wanted to learn this Detroit stuff. So a lot of the techniques were shared, you know, for people to catch up to what we were doing. We've always been ahead of everybody else in Detroit as far as, you know, hairstyling, new trends. And so it's always been, everybody wanted to find out how we did it, and they would pay to watch these stylists put it together on stage in a class setting.
You're saying, like, being ahead of the curve. I know that when we talk about, like, music, or we talk about, you know, dance or things like that, sometimes we find that certain things are innovated in different places. Over your time being involved in this, are there any sort of hairstyles or ideas that were really, you know, created in Detroit and then sort of went national?
Oh, yeah, it was, but I don't know if you know the names of these styles, the spike ponytail, that was one that just took off. The quick weave was actually made from a guy, Little Willie from Detroit. He created that, and that's still going on, you know, so there's probably more, I can't think of the names of them, but there's been a lot of styling, a lot of different stylists who are known for coming up with new trends. But I know the spike ponytail and the quick weave, which is so many variations of that came out of Detroit.
You've taken these stylists, they come in, they take part in the show, and they become sort of celebrities and names under themselves. What does it really take for someone to come in and get to that kind of level, to get that kind of attention?
They got to come kick some ass. That's what they got to do. They got to go, they got to make, you know, see, you have an audience, right? It's not, what we do is not a competition. That's one thing that kills everybody. Competitions will kill you. You know, I would never last this long if I did competitions, but we do showcasing. So the audience really kind of dictates who is really the best in the show or who the best ones are by the response. See, and once the stylist, say, you've never done a Hair War show, say you're out for the first time and you put on the show and the crowd goes nuts because the stuff that you do maybe hasn't been done before, or it's ridiculous, it's some stuff that's like so crazy. And then we got people in the audience, like, you know, hair companies, they're looking for platform artists, they're recruiting. They come to the shows to pick talent. So they find talent, just like a basketball coach would go to a high school to recruit talent for the college, you know. That's what they do at the Hair Wars show. And they come and see who's hot, who's got new trends, and they actually, you know, pick them up. Or they may just come through Hair Wars, like when Lady Gaga first came out. You know, they needed somebody to do some of her wild hairdos. I had just found out about it, and we ended up doing like 7 pieces for her through somebody who I knew could pull it off. But if they didn't do the show, didn't show me what they can do, they would have never got that gig, you know. So there's been music video, people that, you know, we've placed. We've done all the talk shows pretty much. You know, and the reason why certain people get selected because of the fact that they can deliver. They're good. They can entertain. These are hair entertainers, so they can do big, wild stuff. So we did the talk show circuit. We did about 7 or 8, maybe 9 Ricky Lake shows. We did Queen Latifah. We did Oprah. We did Put the Harrycopter on Oprah. That was our most famous hairstyle, was the Harrycopter. We've had a lot of variations of that. And we've done all kinds of stuff. Dayline NBC, E! Extra. We were on the cover of, we did New York, the New Yorker magazine did a cover. We did Life magazine. We had a cover story on Time. So, you know, front page of the Wall Street Journal. It just goes on. A lot of media attention. And we get more media attention than anybody, including Brown Brothers. But because of the hair stars, you know, we promote these people as hair stars. That's one thing that other productions really don't promote so much is the talent.
Did you have anything to do with that Hair Wars show, the TV show on Bravo?
No, it wasn't called Hair Wars. You know, that's one in Canada. Was it a Canadian show?
I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
Bravo. They've done one on Bravo, but it was called something else. They had one on Oxygen called Hair Battle Spectacular.
That's what it was. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. No, they really stole everybody's idea for that show. It was really terrible what they did. You know, the first episode, actually, they showed all the Hair Wars stuff. We got a book called Hair Wars. You know, it was a powerhouse in New York published it. David Yellen, photographer, traveled with us for about two or three years to shoot all the images. And they used those images on their first show. But what they did was they had everybody excited about they were going to be on the show just to get information, get the videos, how to put these hairstyles together. And then they kicked everybody off. We were too old and we were too black for that show. But they kept asking me, they need some younger people, they need more whites. I said, that's not what we have. We got the OGs. This is who we're, these are the people who run this whole business. It's the people that have been in the business for a long time. It's kind of hard for the new people to pick it up so quick. But they didn't want to hear it. They guess, well, you know, we got advertisers. They want demographics. They don't want no old black people. They want the young, hip people to watch the show. That's what we need. And I said, well, I don't think they exist. And they ended up taking a lot of the styles and the video. They kept asking our people, and they was like, for sure, you're in. You're in. We need more videos. How do you do that? And I was telling them to be careful. I'm not going to advise them. But they were sending themselves, and they were so excited about being on this show. And none of them made it. But they took all of the ideas, basically, and used it for the show. And then, the styles weren't what they were supposed to be. But they advertised, these are America's best. But we knew they weren't the best. You know, because the stuff was falling down, and it just wasn't the type of show that represented what really could have been done.
Gee, let me see. Take black culture and then have white people do it. Gee, that's never been done before. The history of the last 100 years.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, it was kind of messed up, you know. So, but that those things happen. That's why we're very careful about what we share with people. You know, we've had all kind of reality show people come up to me, and I've sat on Hollywood meetings and all kind of places, man, to talk to these folks. And, you know, I've signed a couple of papers, but it never happened. But I got contracts, man. I just stack them up, hold on to them, because they're just so ridiculous. You know, how they're going to own everything. And your name, I would have to get permission to probably use my own name, you know. So we never went for any of that because they want us fighting, acting the fool, and that's not what we do. You know, I would have got paid for a season or two, and then I would have been back. You know, the reputation would have been destroyed for every day that was built for what we do. We don't fight and argue and have all that drama. There's drama, but the type of drama that we have, they didn't want to hear it, so I just left it alone. I said, we might never get a reality show, but that's cool, you know, as long as we're going to keep doing what we do.
Speaking of which, what can someone expect if they come to one of your shows?
Well, I guess you can say they can expect the unexpected, because a lot of excitement, though, really. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, I don't tell people what to do. You know, we have rules and regulations, very few of them, you know, as far as just, you know, keep your clothes on, watch the profanity, mild profanity is okay, and just do something really creative and entertaining. So when they come to the show, you know, we may have a theme like the last show we did in April in Detroit at Cobo Hall. We had a Back to the Future theme, so people were working that theme. Next year's theme, which we're doing a show May 4th, 2014, is going to be at the Adobe. It used to be the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn. They changed the name. And that theme is the salute to the troops. So we're planning to put together some military stuff for this show. So they're going to expect to see a little military action on this next one in Detroit.
So is that when the war really happens with Hair Wars?
It's going to be a war, truly, literally. because there's going to be probably rockets in the head shooting. It's going to be some military marching and chanting. And it's going to be, see, we're preparing to send a package to the United U.S. Armed Forces Entertainment Division so we can travel and entertain the troops overseas, you know, different military bases. That's the whole reason why we're doing the show, because we're trying to get to Europe. And it's hard getting these companies to put the money up that we need, so we figured we're going to go through the government, let them sponsor it.
So what did you think of Good Hair?
I thought it was crazy shit. You know, it really, I mean, if I was to put it in a phrase or words to describe it, I would call it an informative comedy about hair. That's what it was. You know, they shared a lot of information about, you know, some of the secrets that women don't want to let out, you know, about the weave, about the perm, you know. So I thought it was just, it was funny. It was a comedy. That's what I looked at it as.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the prices of those weaves and stuff. That just really floored me.
Yeah, well, they're even higher than that. I know one of the girls who used to do a little big hair contest inside of our show, even though it wasn't a competition. That part, we would do like a big hair or hairy copy contest, and the girl would always win, named Kimberly Kimball. And she ended up, she's got her own product now, and she's been doing Beyonce's hair for a little while. And when she told me what she charged to do Beyonce's hair, it was crazy. You know, so that $3,500, whatever they were talking about, $1,000, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing too. Guys like us, Mike is bald and mine's falling out. So
I don't have much left myself, man. I lost the hair war myself. You know? tell people you don't have to have hair to be there. You know, it's just come for the entertainment. You know, so yeah. But you know, the whole thing is about the money being spent on hair, like watching Good Hair and listening to the stories. I mean, I heard them so many times from other people about, you know, a woman could be hungry, but she needs a hair done, so she just starved. She's got to get that done, you know. That's just a priority, you know. It's priority number one to some people. They can't even go to the store unless their hair is done. You know, they can't even get out the house because they want nobody to look at them, because their hair is like, you know, this is it. Without the hair, they don't have an identity or something. So it is very important to a lot of women.
Yeah, there's always that danger, though, of people who aren't immersed in the culture looking at a slice of it like this and then just assuming, projecting and saying, like, all black women are like this. You know, all of them have weaves. All of them want this kind of lifestyle and stuff. So I think it's very important that we always remember that it's not everybody, that it's just this kind of thin slice. Yeah, I mean, but really, what would you say? Like, if there was a percentage, what would it be?
It's not a thin slice. It's more than a thin slice.
Yeah?
Big chunk.
Okay. It is. Okay.
Big chunk. But you know what? I do think that Good Hair movie has made some of the black women change their thoughts of the weave and the perm and all of the dangers that maybe they didn't know about. That's why I call it an informative comedy, because of the fact that a lot of information that they have with the chemists in the movie and some of the dangers that, you know, that could happen when you burn your hair and burn your scalp. You know, so right now there's a natural hair movement going on that's like bigger than ever before. It's probably never been talked about in mainstream media. You know, within the underground circuit, you can see publications that may talk about it, people on YouTube maybe talking about it a little bit. But the natural hair movement is bigger than what these big companies are wanting to happen. They're a little worried right now, because they know that if the chemicals, if they're not selling the chemical stuff as much as they are now, then they're not going to make the big money. You know, the weaves, they have the weave shortage right now anyway, a hair shortage around the world. So, but with the natural hair movement coming up, you know, I have to worry about the hair shortage, because a lot of women are going to natural hair, which means that they're not putting all this processed stuff in their hair, they're not burning it, they're not buying so much weave. And you have these small black companies that are developed to sell products for natural hair. And the big major companies, you know, the white companies who bought the small, well, they bought the big black companies up, they might not have people in their company to make this new product that's being used right now. But there are some people who are developing, a lot of small natural hair companies have developed in the last 2 or 3 years that are starting to get out there. And that's the next move. I'm curious to see where it's going with it, and, you know, how big these companies are going to get, or how much of this movement is going to actually change the whole culture of black hair. But it could happen.
Speaking of the natural movement, have you found that people who are interested in that are coming over and wanting to do styling and hair wars or something like that?
Yeah, we're getting a few more natural hairstylists. Because you know, one lady, we just had a show, was maybe 2 years ago in Los Angeles, and she's a natural hairstylist, and she wanted to do, she said, I never did anything fantasy with natural hair, but I know you guys like a little fantasy in your show. So she ended up doing some amazing work, you know. And we've got some of the braiders who do fantasy braid creations. They're starting to come on the show too. We don't have a lot of it because a lot of our stylists are still heavy into the weave, because you need a lot of the weave to create some of the styles that they make.
You mentioned it already, but just when is the next Hair Wars? And then also, where can people find out more about what you do in Hair Wars Detroit?
Okay, well, Hair Wars, the next Hair Wars in Detroit is going to be Sunday, May the 4th. We're having education classes all day Sunday, May 5th. It's going to be at the Adoba, A-D-O-B-A, crazy name, hotel. It used to be the High Regency in the Fairlane Town Center in Dearborn, Michigan. And they can get information by going to the website, which is www.hairwarsustour.com, U-S-T-O-U-R.com. And also, we have information. We've started weekly internet shows called Hair Wars Around the World, where we feature different hairstylists as guests on the show. And they can always tune into that by going to the website. Again, there's a link that takes you on the show, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're getting a lot of people from around the world that are starting to tap into the show. We've only been on the air for 3 months, and we've had at least a couple of guests a show. It's a two-hour program, and you slide information. Like tomorrow night, we have a lady coming in talking about hair color. She's one of our first white guests that's coming in to talk. It's going to be a little controversial, but those are the kind of things that we like to have because it's the real deal, and we want to speak the truth, so we want to share all this information with people who need to know.
Is there an archive available of the past shows?
Well, what you can do is, actually, there's not archives available yet. We have them all, except for one that didn't get recorded for some reason. But we've got all the interviews on YouTube, all the interviews of the stylists. You know, we don't have all the footage from the other stuff that we show in the show, but we have interviews, and they're usually about 15 to 30 minutes per interview. Those are on YouTube. All you got to do, what you got to find out the name, though. I don't know how I would be able to put that out there. But you go to Hair Wars, if you go to Hair Wars, you would have to put Hair Wars and that stylist's name to really pop it up on the top of YouTube. If you want to go to our email, you can get our email. We can send you the link to everybody's interview, because I do have that through our email. We do email blasts every week, about 25,000 people we send it out to. And you can be on that email list by emailing us at hairwars@yahoo.com. And we can put you on the list and keep you posted of all the interviews that we have on the show.
Sounds good. We'll definitely let people know. And you also said that there's a book available?
Well, it's a book in the bookstores. It's been out about 3 years now. It's called Hair Wars. It's a photo. It's a pictorial, about 100 pages. It's a hardcover coffee table book. It's a beautiful book, and it's raw. It's no Photoshop. It's still probably available in some of the bookstores around the world, and it's also maybe on Amazon.com. It's called Hair Wars, and it's the photographer. His name is David Yellen, Y-E-L-L-E-N. He's the guy that actually, his name is on there as the, not the publisher would be Powerhouse Books. But it's available. It's been out a little while, so I'm not sure where you can really get it right now other than Amazon.com.
I just wanted to give people some options so that way they can find out more about you and what you do and if they'd like to pick that up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you really want to know about Hair Wars, we do have a documentary out called Hair Wars, The Hair Wars Story. It's told by Hump the Grinder. Now, that's my little brother. He's not a real serious filmmaker, but he's working at it. And he had a low budget. I could afford him. So he filmed it. We put it out. It's available on the website, too. That's hairwarsustour.com. It tells the whole story from when we first started in the clubs in Detroit. Cause I used to be on the rap tour, the New York City Fresh Festival. And that's how the story starts. Of me getting an idea of I wanted to do something on the road. It ended up being hair. And that's all in the documentary, our own documentary.
And you said people can pick that up?
Yeah, they can buy it. They can pick it up online. It's $12.99, free shipping within the U.S. and Canada. And we'll ship it right out to them. And it's called, like I said, it's right on our website, hairwarsustour.com. It's on the homepage.
Sounds good. We'll definitely put a link up when we put the post up for the episode so people can get get in touch with it and maybe pick up a copy if they're interested as well. So, but is there anything that we're leaving out? Anything you want to add that maybe we forgot to ask you about?
Well, we just had a call from some people in London about they're having some distant relatives from the royal family coming to America to do a thing on the culture of America. And one of their stops will be in Detroit. So they come in November. And so they're going to be coming in. We're going to do something with them at one of our Wednesday shows when they come in. We're going to freak them out with some hairdos and send them back over to the royal family for them to check out a little Detroit flavor.
Awesome. That sounds great.
We're just trying to keep it alive. You know, we had our first European hairstylist perform at the show in April. Her name is Eva from Copenhagen, Denmark. And she found us online, and she came with her girls, and they put on a great show. Had a short movie that they played. So we're trying to reach out more to folks. We're just getting a lot of Japanese that are watching our show on Wednesday. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in Tokyo when they watch it. So they're a little ahead of us, but it's giving us another audience. So we're trying to tap into that so we can bring them over to Detroit, too. I'd like to thank you guys for the interview. You know, I feel like I'm in a projection booth.
I'm aware some stare at my hair. In fact, to be fair, some really despair of my hair. But I don't care, because they're not aware, nor are they debonair. In fact, they're just square. They see hair down to there, say beware, and go off on a tear. I say no fair. A head that's bare is really nowhere. So be like a bear. Be fair with your hair. Show it you care. Wear it to there. Or to there. Or to there if you dare. My wife bought some hair at a fair to use as a spare. Did I care? Au contraire. Spare hair is fair. In fact, hair can be rare. Fred Astaire got no hair, nor does a chair, nor a chocolate éclair. And where is the hair on a pear? Nowhere, mon frère. Now that I've shared this affair of the hair, I think I'll repair to my lair and use Nair. Do you care?
Jennifer Thomas, and I'm a co-founder of the Hair Meetup Group, along with...
My name is SP, and I'm here too.
Very cool. So you work under the title known as Naturally Fly Detroit. Can you kind of tell me what Naturally Fly Detroit is?
So Naturally Fly Detroit is a group basically that was put together to help encourage, inspire, and empower women to be who they are naturally, starting with their hair. And then we trickle down from there to every other facet of things the women need to be empowered and encouraged with.
So what is the natural hair movement?
I think it's a lot of women just returning or, you know, just returning to who they are and just kind of dissing what the media's ideal of beauty is and wanting to figure out what it is for themselves. That's what I kind of think it is. It's just, you know, it's just kind of returning to, you know, who you are instead of buying into everyone else's ideal of what beauty is.
What kind of images do you see Black women being fed as far as what is beautiful versus what is natural?
Oh, relaxed hair, weave,
straight hair. Hair all the way down
your back
to your butt, like long, stupid, ridiculous long hair,
luxurious wavy hair,
flowing in the wind hair,
like Farrah Fawcett or something.
Yeah.
Skinny waist, big behind, makeup, a lot of things that isn't what everybody looks like. Trying to be somebody, trying to fit us into a mold that we are not. And that's not how we naturally look.
That was the thing that I was going to ask about is for you, at what point did you go, you know, this isn't working, like this image and, you know, the money I'm spending to get the hair done and stuff like that, like this isn't working and I'm going to go natural. Like what was sort of the breaking point, I guess, maybe for you to do that?
For me, and this is SP talking right now,
We're sorry, but we've run out of time. Be sure to listen to the rest of this episode at jackaloperadio.com in the Projection Booth archives. And be sure to leave your feedback at projection-booth.com. Stay classy.